Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
Hi, how are you? My name is Andrew WK. They say when things are very delicious, it must be Heritage Radio.
Welcome to Japanese. I'm your host Akiko Katayama, a food writer and a director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from our studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I will try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Gaku Shibata, who is the owner of two popular Japanese restaurants in Lower East Side in New York City. And one is called Yopparai, an upscale Japanese sake bar and restaurant. And the other one is Azasu, a casual Japanese izakaya, which also serves Japanese small restaurant food. We'll talk about how Gaku started those great Japanese restaurants with his wife, Christy, and why he decided to introduce sumo food to New Yorkers, and much more. So you're going to have a great show. Hello, Gaku. Welcome to the show. So first of all, when and why did you come to the U.S.?
Because, you know, my wife is American. And then after get married, we live in Tokyo for 5 years. And then we decided to come here in New York City to start business.
Mm. Okay. And I also heard that you lived in China before you came to the States.
Oh, actually, I met my wife in Beijing, China. It's 20 years ago.
Okay.
As the exchange student.
Mm. So, and I heard you exchanged, after you guys left China, you exchanged letters for 10 years and got married.
Right. And at that time, we have no email, text, something. So it's take, the 2 weeks to a round trip to
Right. That makes more right. Precious to communicate.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And so how did you get into food business?
After graduate college, I worked for the several company, and then I decided to, start my own business.
Because you hated working for company?
Yes, I'm not really good at working for company, I guess. So okay. I have decided to start own my business. And the first business is I import pushcart and hot dog pushcart from New Jersey.
Oh, wow.
And then we had the five hot dog pushcart in Tokyo.
So that was when you were in Tokyo. And then, after China, you just captured that pushcart.
Right. That's kind of extreme, change. But, it's it works. And, the Japanese people enjoy American style and hot dog at that time.
Okay. And it's like a classic American hot dog?
Yes. We won't import pushcart and then the beef and hot dog from the U.S. And then I had the pushcart at the Tokyo Dome, which is a baseball field in Tokyo.
And that's the baseball stadium
in
Tokyo.
At that time, the Matsui came to New York. So a lot of people interested in American culture and major league stuff. So, and we also have the grocery store, the parking area, or and it's a really mobile business, so, it's good, the catering and everything.
Good timing.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And, but then you somehow came to the States, so, and then you opened a restaurant. So what happened between, you had a wife and then?
Because I have no cooking skill, so at the time I decided to learn the basic cooking skill. So So I tried to work so leisure in Japan, but I was at over 30, so it's hard to start from zero.
Right.
So I asked one of my favorite restaurants called Abraya, and I asked the owner to give me some experience.
Mm.
And
that's generous.
Yeah.
Right, but did you know the restaurant before?
Yes, I used to be the good customer of them for the last 10 years.
Mm.
So that's why he offered me to work for them for 2 years.
Okay, yes. So what kind of restaurant was it?
It is a very authentic, the old the sake bar style in Roppongi.
Mm. So, like classic Abraya means Abraya or Abraya?
Abraya, yes.
Okay, so like a whole izakaya food, whole Japanese,
yes.
Like home cooking. Too.
Yes. Actually, our head chef, Yoporai, is the son of owner of Abraya.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, he has the tradition of the whole place.
Yes, so. Yes. So, I just want to bring Japanese and the izakaya vibe from Tokyo to New York. So, I know our restaurant is very authentic as Japanese.
Mm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's wonderful. Right, because I heard at least there are 1,500 Japanese restaurants in New York City. Mm-hmm. So, we wanted to do something a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, we focus on, cooking from scratch. So, we have homemade miso, homemade umeboshi prawn, and the pico, which is the nukazuke.
Mm.
So the Yoporai's concept is the cook from the scratch.
Mm, yes. Okay. Well, let's talk about the Yoporai first, because you opened it first out of two restaurants,
yes.
Right? So when did you open it, and what kind of restaurant?
We opened 5 years ago, and that's really a cozy small restaurant. We just have 30 seats there.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly the counter seating, so I can communicate with chef and communicate with sake, the sommelier.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And so it's similar to Abraya.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And how was the training? But let's go back quickly. You said over 30, you started training.
Yes.
At that classic authentic Japanese restaurant.
Yeah.
How was the training in Tokyo?
It is hard, very hard, because I didn't have any experience professional cooking. So I have to start from dishwashing, and but the owner is a very generous man, so he tried to give me a lot of experience. So it is hard, but I enjoy too.
Okay, maybe he wanted to, because he liked you, and then he just wanted to have someone working abroad.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Like ambassador.
Yes.
Right. Interesting. And, I went to Yoporai a while ago.
Thank
when
you.
My friend sake brewer came to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very classic, good sake brewery. And the owner heard about the fabulous sake list at Yoporai.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can tell us about your sake list at Yoporai.
Yes,
Oh, by the way, the Yoporai means drunk.
Yes, drunker.
Right.
Because, I'm a big drunker, so that's why I named my restaurant called Yoporai.
Okay. So what kind of sake do you have? How many?
I like, I'm a sake drinker, so I focus on Junmai, which is a casual sake. And also, I prefer Yamahai or Kimoto, old school sake.
So the Junmai means pure rice without any added alcohol to fortify, right? And then that's a pure ingredient flavor.
Yes.
Okay. And then other Yamahai, that's a more classic way.
Yeah,
to make
right.
It.
So our food is a really good pairing with old school sake. So we focus on old school traditional sake. With traditional Japanese food. Yes.
Okay. And as of last night, I checked the menu on the website. You have 25 sake by the glass and 31 bottles by the bottle. And it's amazing how it's really premium.
Yeah, but
good
sake. I can serve by the carafe. The customer can try a couple kind of sake.
Mm.
So I focus on the serve by carafe.
Right.
And also the small big party, maybe I prefer the bottle of sake, but I think it's more fun to pick challenge
right.
Or try several kind of sake.
Okay. And you have a sommelier license, sake sommelier license too.
Yes.
So you just kind of curated the sake list by yourself?
Yes, yes. I know the sake list is picked by me, and the sake I picked is of course that is my favorite sake. Mm. Yes.
Right. Okay. And let's talk about your second restaurant, Azasu. Mm-hmm. So Azasu means thank you in Japanese slang.
Yes, that is slang, and young people, it's really lazy. So actually, thank you means arigato gozaimasu. Mm. It's really a long sentence.
Right.
So Japanese young people say just, shorten Azasu. It's
that's
really casual, new vocabulary.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, it's really short.
Yeah.
So when did you open Azasu, and what kind of restaurant is it compared to Yoparai?
Yes, because, Yoparai is really small, and then counter seating, a cozy place. So mm-hmm. We want to have more party or casual.
Mm.
It's, Azasu is much casual than, Yoparai. Mm.
So you opened it, when did you open it?
It's 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yes, and we focus on the cup sake. Which is
we're gonna talk about it in a minute because I have a huge idea about that.
Okay.
Right. So so sounds like it's like a beginner's version of Yoparai. That's Azasu.
Yes, I can say that a gateway restaurant for the traditional Japanese.
Mm. Okay. And then the food is more comfort food?
Yes, more yeah, so I know a Japanese soul food, a comfort food, a burger or pizza in the U.S.
Right, so it's like a takoyaki, curry, and a gyoza.
Yes,
kind of,
yes, yes.
Right, and sounds like they go well with the drinks.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and of course you serve a sumo wrestler,
yes,
chankonabe.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Let's see. So you have a very interesting drink menu, Azasu. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can talk about that. So first you have, again, the cup sake.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the largest selection of cup sake in Manhattan.
Yes.
What is cup sake, first of all?
Cup sake is the sake in a cup,
mm-hmm,
with a lid. So it's a, the small size. So it's a,
Yeah, it's like, I think... It's like 880 milliliters and 6 ounces. It's like slightly more generous,
yes,
by the glass,
yes,
size. Right. Okay. And what sounds like cup so cheap.
But yeah. But, that used to be cup sake is really casual sake, mm-hmm, used to be. And especially Shinkansen trip. It's train trip or party or... a barbecue kind of stuff.
Right.
But now the brewer focus on make it a very good quality.
Mm.
So it's different, from the before that.
Right. Yeah. Well, I still remember when I was in Japan, I was a little,
mm-hmm,
if you get on the train, mm-hmm, and there's old man drinking red,
right,
face.
Right,
and then
right,
in
right.
Japan, it's really generous. You don't hide the alcohol.
Right.
So they really drink and, mm-hmm, sleep. And
yeah,
that was not a very cool image.
Yeah. Yeah. But right? Now it's the sake brewer focus on make it very good quality. So it's same as the bottle of sake now.
Mm. Okay. And actually, I heard there is one sake retailer called Ajinomachidaya in Tokyo,
mm-hmm,
and which carries over 80 cup sake.
Mm-hmm.
And they initiated a current cup sake boom, they say, because the store asked sake breweries to create cup sake, and many breweries responded with cup sake packaging in fun, cute, or stylish glasses.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was looking at all those things, and then I've seen one... the light bulb shaped glass.
Oh, sounds cool.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, if you finish drinking it, you really want to keep that.
Right.
Glass.
So some of customer bring back the sake cup as a souvenir.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I wish. I will do it next time.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you have how many labels? I counted to 16 on the list right now. 16.
Yes. Cups. Yes.
Great. And do you have any policy try to get different regions?
No, I just try to collect as much as possible now, because we have a limited kind of cup sake so far. So
to the U.S.
Yeah, yes, that's why we just try to collect as much kind as we can.
Okay, and the price can range from 7 to 18,
mm-hmm,
which is,
mm-hmm,
really to me premium by the glass,
yes,
kind,
yes,
of program.
Six daughter in sake is very casual. It's like, you know, for the casual sake is for the everyday, mm-hmm. and the 16 sake is for some experience.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. Well, if you think of a bite a glass wine, which can range from mm-hmm. 9 to 20.
Yes.
So it's a good buy, mm-hmm. right, to try different yeah. things. Right. Okay. And do customers order it?
Yes, and people enjoy it.
Like more than the other bottles or, you know, by the carafe sake?
Or? Yeah, but that is kind of a new thing for the American customer. So, mm. you know, that's I think the kind of, you know, like something new for them. Mm. Cup sake is not something new for me, but I think, you know, that in America, mm. cup sake is something really new products.
So, okay, yes. So you wanted to introduce something fun to the American market? That's why you carry so many cup sake?
Yes.
Mm. Maybe you can be the first to start the boom.
Oh, I try. Yeah, I hope so.
Right. Because it's portable.
Yes.
And it's fun.
Mm-hmm. And it's fresh open all the time.
Oh, right,
and,
right.
Yeah, it's easy to store.
Because it's smaller.
Yeah. Store.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And all right. So now I think we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about Japanese small vessels.
Thank you.
Chanko nabe.
Okay.
So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's unique store in Lower Manhattan is home to perhaps the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, plus the rarest natural sharpening stones and exquisitely designed tableware. They also host special events such as knife sharpening demonstrations and parties with New York's most famous chefs and restaurateurs. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the implicit and elegance of Japanese culture to your table, be it in your home or in the finest restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Gaku Shibata, who is the owner of Yopparai and Azasu, beautiful Japanese restaurants. And let's talk about chanko nabe.
Yes.
I have to talk about this. Mm-hmm. So we've been talking about cup sake,
mm-hmm.
but you have your own brand.
Yes, we try to have a private brand with collaborated with a Nambu Bijin Brewer mm. in Iwate, Japan.
Mm. That was actually hit by the tsunami and
earthquake, yeah, yeah.
and then really beautifully revived mm-hmm. from the damage.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So what kind of sake in the cup?
Yes, that is one of my favorite brewers, the Southern Beauty, which is a Nambu Bijin, and the owner of the brewer, tried to help me to make a private brand sake, cup sake,
mm.
with our logo, and they're like a double name, design.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, is it ready or it's coming out soon?
I'm not sure because of the importing is in a lot of process.
Oh,
so, I'm not sure when, but we're working on it now.
Mm, yes. Well, I can't wait.
Yeah.
Okay. And Nambu Bijin, I really like this brewery, mm-hmm. and it's founded in 1902,
mm-hmm.
and this sake is globally recognized, like so many awards and prizes. And they actually have an American apprentice right now at the brewery,
mm-hmm.
I think, for a long time.
Ben Bell.
2 years, yeah. So, they're really forward-minded.
Mm-hmm.
And I think cup sake at that level of a sake brewery,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it may be a little challenge, but the owner, Kuji-san,
yes.
yeah, he just really pushes the boundary of sake making.
Mm-hmm.
So that's wonderful. Okay. And before we go into the chanko nabe, let's talk about your hopi, which is another amazing beverage from Japan.
Sure.
So what is this is a hopi, H-O-P-P-Y, and what is it and how popular is it in Japan?
Hopi is a beer flavor, non-alcoholic beverage, and mixed with shochu, which is a like Japanese, the vodka type of sake, you know, the beverage.
Right, distilled, and the ingredients can be rice to barley to carrots to you name it.
Yes.
Right, and then the alcohol ranges from, I think, around 25% on average.
Right.
So you just mix with the hopi,
right?
And hopi is, I heard that the recipe of hopi, it's a hopi itself is produced by one private company.
Right.
And when was it started? The hopi was made, I think, after World War II or something like that.
Yeah,
like a long history.
Yeah, well, no, we have a lack of wheat and stuff, so you know they try to produce the beer by themselves.
Okay, yeah. So you cannot buy beer, so let's make hopi.
Right, yeah, it's like a more casual type of a beer just after World War II. Mm. Yes.
Okay, and then naturally people add alcohol to drink. Okay, and which tend to be shochu.
Yes.
Okay. And so you are, to be honest, like this hopi reminds me of something nostalgic.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
Like posters in stores and some cultural connotation in it. So, and I heard hopi is becoming more popular in Japan again.
Yes. Hopi is, like a really Tokyo local drink. So people live in Tokyo area, people know about hopi, but, outside of Tokyo people doesn't know about hopi, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, that is really that. Tokyo local food. And so I'm native to Tokyo, so I just want to introduce some like local Japanese drink, Tokyo local drink to New York.
Right. And I heard also the hopi is healthier than other alcohol beverages, like beer, because it's low in alcohol and as well as calories and sugar and purine, which can cause gout.
Right.
So
that's why now, it's a lot of young women or the young people that try to
like a diet
diet or something and getting popular for the young people too.
Interesting. Right, because the shochu became really popular too a while ago, so it's kind of like the right timing. And also, I heard the president of hopi, she's the third generation, I think. And, I met her. She has great energy. Mm-hmm. And she started, really had some massive kind of change in the structure of the company, marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. And I think she has a radio show, something like that.
Maybe,
to promote hopi.
Yeah,
yeah, I think it seems it's working.
Mm-hmm.
Right. All right. And then you are the first official restaurant in this country to carry hopi.
I think so, yes.
Right? And I heard that the president of hopi gave very strict orders to serve hopi.
Right.
So what kind of orders?
She just, the serve hopi for the, in a really proper way in U.S. too. So she showed me the recipe and how to serve. So we try to, follow her style.
So what's important? I mean, to me, I've never tried hopi, to be honest. Actually, a couple times, but, the way you mixed with shochu, what's the proper way to?
It's like, like 20% of shochu and the rest of them is kind of beer. But we have to freeze the mug and also we have to freeze the shochu too.
Oh, wow.
So that's why, to keep the hopi cold.
So 20% shochu, 80% hopi, and then frozen, like really chilled.
Yeah, frozen mug and, the frozen shochu, too.
So the key is
so it's like a beer slushy type,
Okay, so that the texture as
right.
much as
flavor.
Right, because shochu doesn't freeze with the hopi, kind of like slushy.
Yes.
Oh, wow, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll try that too next time. Okay, and all right, so finally, let's talk about chanko. All right, so the Azasu features sumo food and sumo culture.
Yes.
So why did you decide to do that?
I'm a big fan of sumo, and sumo is like a big entertainment in Japan too. So, the kabuki, everything is like kind of popular in New York now in mm-hmm. the last year. So I think, you know, that kind of sumo has a big potential for the audience in the U.S. too.
Right. That is true because, the sumo is originated in Japan. It's like a really native mm-hmm. Japanese sports, right? And I heard it was developed along with the Japanese national religion, Shintoism.
Right.
So it's like the history goes back to like 10,000 years. Mm-hmm. And because it's a kind of religious rituals
yes.
are very important. Mm-hmm. And so when you see sumo tournaments, there are many interesting actions and beautiful traditional clothing yes. to watch other than actual wrestling. Mm-hmm. So
not only the enjoy the like fighting, you know, big guy fighting, but you can see that everything is like clothes or in culture and, you know, the ceremony initiation stuff. So I think not only to watch, like, you know, the fighting.
Right. Yeah because the rules are actually simple, and two wrestlers fight in the ring called the dohyo, mm-hmm. and which is about 15 feet in diameter, mm-hmm. and whichever steps out or falls off the ring loses the match. So
yes.
itself is like in
very
the second.
Very simple, very simple.
Right. Yeah. But then I think they look at their eyes, into their mm-hmm. eyes each other, and it's just like not just a second,
right.
like for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and it's like a moment. It's called the ma.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's like kind of really martial arts kind
yes.
of a spiritual
yes.
thing. So mm-hmm. it's really fun,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay. And for the listeners who doesn't know anything about sumo, so there are six tournament seasons
right.
called the Honbasho
mm-hmm.
A year. And three of which are held in Tokyo, and the rest are in Osaka,
yes.
Nagoya, and Fukuoka.
Each tournament is 15 days.
Okay. So no break. Like,
yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I remember my dad, like, on this Honbasho.
Yeah.
It comes from earlier.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, sumo seems becoming popular in Japan, not just among old men anymore, mm-hmm. but also younger generation. I heard in particular women recently.
Yes.
So,
mm-hmm.
do you know why?
We had a grand champion last Basho.
Mm.
And Japanese the champion is we didn't have any grand champions since 10 years Japanese the Japanese people start to get interested in to watch sumo now,
right? Because
yeah.
Actually there are increasing non-Japanese sumo wrestlers
mm-hmm.
lately,
yeah.
And I checked, and the first big name non-Japanese sumo wrestler mm-hmm. called Takamiyama.
Yes.
He appeared in 1960s.
Right. It's from Hawaii, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And then he, after retired, he became like a TV talent.
Mm-hmm,
and then
mm-hmm.
it seems like that attracted other non-Japanese
right.
wrestlers
yeah.
from abroad.
Mm-hmm.
And, Takamiyama's from Hawaii, but you see more people like Mongol
mm-hmm.
and Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. So, the Japanese winning, finally,
yes.
after 10 years.
Yep.
Okay. And I also heard there is another reason why sumo is becoming popular again in Japan, because
mm-hmm.
The Japan Sumo Association, so the popularity of sumo is declining.
Mm.
So they tried hard to revive it, especially in the last several years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are some scandals and
yes,
everything.
Yes.
So it's kind of the image
mm-hmm.
of sumo
mm-hmm.
decline too. So, for instance, the association started to use social media to reach out to millennials.
Mm-hmm.
And I checked the Twitter account, Sumo Kyokai. It's SUMOKYOKAI,
mm-hmm.
Sumo Kyokai. And it's amazing because sumo wrestlers used to be known for not fan friendly
yes.
at all, like grumpy face.
Mm-hmm.
But now they make funny faces on Twitter account
right.
and they model with pretty actresses.
Yeah.
So it seems that the association's efforts
mm-hmm.
are really working well.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So now, let's go back to chanko.
Mm-hmm.
So that you serve at the zazu, what kind of chanko do you serve?
Actually, chanko means any food, you know, for the sumo fighter. So the steak could be a chanko, or a burger
really?
Could be chanko.
Ah.
But the chanko means the food for the sumo fighter.
Mm.
Yes.
Okay. Right. And then it's a nabe. It's a pot.
Yes, hot pot
dish.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I kind of associated chanko means strictly, like directly to
mm-hmm.
the pot dish.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but you serve the pot dish?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a sumo fighter and the practice, starting practice early in the morning at the sumo bear. It's like a sumo house. And then after practice, you know, the youngest apprentice, you know, and prep and the food for every sumo fighter in the sumo house.
Oh, wow.
So which is a chanko nabe.
Because I heard they say, you know, sumo wrestlers say eating is part of the important part of their job.
Right. That is like, you know, the part of training too. So after practice, and then, you know, the everybody, you know, the surrounding one hot pot and share one hot pot together.
Okay. And then, so basically, it's like, how many people are in the small room?
It depends on how big is the small room, but, you know, the maybe like five. Smallest is five or ten, you know, biggest is like 30, 40.
Okay, so everybody takes turn to cook chanko.
Right, yeah. And also every small house has an own recipe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So depending on who the boss is.
Right, yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so what's in chanko nabe? Like ingredients, basically.
Okay. We based on the chicken broth, and you know, we put the napa cabbage and the fish cake and the chicken and the pork, and you know, our signature is like a tsukune, which is a meatball, fresh meatball, chicken meatball. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, is any origin, any region of which sumo house?
Yeah, I don't know. Yes, I.
Yeah, like any wrestler's house, like, you know, I heard that chanko has a lot of regional origins.
Yeah.
Right? So it can be Tokyo or Kansai.
Yeah, so every the area has unique, you know, recipe too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we try to have a Tokyo style chanko nabe.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And it sounds very nutritious because of protein and vegetable.
Yeah.
And any kind.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And I also heard chanko is ideal for sumo wrestlers because you can put different kinds of ingredients, like depending on what you need, depending on the health and condition of the wrestlers. And also, because like you said, because you surround one pot, and the whole, you know, the wrestlers surround. So that kind of a community mindset increases a sense of solidarity among wrestlers.
Yeah.
It's a cultural foundation too in the sumo bear. Okay. All right. And then I heard also that some non-Japanese wrestlers couldn't fit in that palette of Japanese, because you have to eat it,
right?
So it could be a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know, some people from the Mongol or like, you know, the Europe, the people, it's really hard to, you know, adjust, you know, the culture of a sumo room. So they have to eat same stuff as everybody, and they have to speak Japanese. So
Wow. So I heard that Takamiyama had a ketchup.
Right.
Because he couldn't eat it.
But it could be, it could be chanko too, you know, with mayonnaise, means ketchup, or whatever, it's fine. You know, this is a chanko, means it's like a food for the sumo fighter.
Right.
So,
okay. And then you can find a lot of chanko restaurants in Japan, right? If our listeners go to, like, you know, areas near stadiums, like Ryogoku in Tokyo, you can find great restaurants, chanko restaurants.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
So, most of the restaurant owner or chef is like the retired, small fighter, yes.
Because so, they know.
Yeah, so they take over the recipe from the, you know, sumo bear. So, you know, it's really a good experience.
Interesting.
You know? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. But it sounds like even if you eat sumo food, you don't gain weight like them.
Right. You know, because, you know, actually the chanko nabe is very healthy, you know. Protein and the fiber, vitamin, everything. So, but the thing is, the sumo fighter have a nap just after have breakfast. So that's why, you know, they try to get weight. That's why, you know,
So because they get up really early in the morning, like 4 o'clock, and then train, and then have a big breakfast.
Yes.
And
then
sleep.
Yes.
So that's how you gain weight.
Yeah. So please, you know, enjoy our hot pot, but don't go to bed, you know, immediately.
Okay. So that's a good tip from dining at the Zaisu. All right. So how many types of chanko do you serve at the Zaisu?
We have three kinds so far now. One is the original soy sauce based broth, and the miso And another one is the tripe, you know, the beef tripe.
Oh, wow.
And also we have a vegan and hot pot too.
Mm, okay. Yeah. So is it common to use the organ meats like motsu?
Yeah, I know. As I said, you know, chanku is no. There is no rule, you know. So, but I know southern, you know, the sumo fighter, like, you know, the from Kyushu, you know, they enjoy the tribe, that kind of thing too. So, you know, it could be chanku too.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it's like people talking about healthy broth,
right?
So yeah. It's something I'd see in common with healthy food. Great. Okay. And how do you serve it? Do you serve on the table? Is it cooked?
Yes, yeah. I know that our server, you know, help customer to cook, you know, nabe. Mm. Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's it. That's great.
Yeah.
Right. Because I think it's really more popular in Japan than way more than here to have cooking, you know, actual.
Right. Because, you know, the Japanese people knows how to cook chanko nabe, but, you know, I think, you know, American people doesn't know, so we try to help them to cook in a proper way.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so it's a cultural education.
Right, yeah.
Right, but it's fun, like you said, like surrounding one big pot with friends or families, that's really...
That's Japanese style communication, right? This is, you know, the surrounding pot and, you know, the share one pot of food and, you know, the friends or family or something like that. That is one of Japanese culture, I think.
And also as you cook together, too.
Right, right. So, you know, this is a kind of like a really close, you know, the kind of relationship food.
Right. Yeah. And also fight for its favorite ingredients. Right. Yeah, that's a part of one. Okay. And you can watch sumo at the Zasu on a big screen when it's in season. Mm-hmm. So when you show the program, it's like, you know, the season.
Yes, next month, you know, it's the tournament will come up. So we're going to do the Sanga Special.
Okay, yeah. So the March season.
Yes.
Okay. And you just go in and then eat at the Zasu and you can see what they're...
Right. Every server and the employees are a big small fan. So, you know, anybody has question, we love to answer about sake. Not only sake. Mm. We can answer about sumo too.
Oh, really? Yes. Okay. Yeah, I've been away from the game. So, maybe that's great. Yeah. Very helpful. Mm-hmm. All right. And so, listeners, it's really easy to understand. It's fun. To watch.
Yes.
So go to Zasun and enjoy sumo watching.
Please.
Right. Okay. And so there is another fun event that's a sumo viewing party at Brooklyn Brewery in Williamsburg. The next one is Wednesday, March 23rd. Mm-hmm. And it's organized by actually one of our hosts at Heritage Radio, Michael Harlan-Turkel. And it's going to be the sixth sumo party. And that he has produced. And I heard the last one, also at the Brooklyn Brewery, collected 120 people just to watch the sumo.
That's good.
And also, you served the chanko nabe.
Yeah,
at the
that
party.
Time, yeah. I helped them to make the vegan chanko that time.
Mm. Yes. Okay. So how was the reaction of the guests?
Because, you know, the sumo is a very simple thing, so... no need a big explaining, right? So it looks like a lot of people is enjoying and clapping hand, screaming. So I had a really good vibe that time, really, you know. And also I'm really happy, you know, American, you know, audience interested in our Japanese culture.
Nice. Yeah, it's funny. So if you stand behind the whole audience and then some wrestlers move to this side and that side of wrestling, they move in the same way.
Right.
So it's a very captivating. Yeah. Right. And so the small event, I think they're going to serve the bento box too. Right. And so for details of this event, small party at the Brooklyn Brewery. So listeners, please visit Sumo Stew 6 on Facebook. So it's SUMO Stew, STEW, number 6, SUMO Stew 6 on Facebook. And it's going to be Wednesday, March 23rd, Brooklyn Brewery. And also, listeners who are interested in viewing sumo in the stadium in Japan, there's a website to get all the information. And that's sumo.or.jp, sumo.or.jp. And you can find all the English information there. And it's really truly a special experience to be in the stadium, and you really get immersed in the culture. And tickets runs from $20 to $130 as of I checked yesterday. And also, you can buy very seasonal regional bento boxes at the stadium, too. Mm-hmm. So it's such a cultural experience. Right. Okay. And so here, you have a very exciting sumo event coming up, even more exciting,
right,
at the ZAS in April. Mm-hmm. What is it?
So one of the sumo fighters called Kyokuten Ho, mm-hmm, will visit to New York City.
Yes. Right. And then he's retiring.
Right.
So, I mean, because he's retiring, maybe he's more open to visit outside, because mm-hmm, it's such a traditional structure.
So, after retired sumo fighter have to cut off his hair, which is called chonmage. Mm. It's a really unique hairstyle.
Right.
So, he want to come to New York City with the chonmage, which is hair.
Mm.
So, and then after he coming back to Japan, he cut off his hair.
Mm, so, that the official retirement.
Right. Official retirement, yes.
It's
yes.
called the Danpachiki.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So, okay. And then what's going to happen? He comes and at the Zasu?
Right,
and
yeah.
What he's going to do?
Yeah, he's going to bring one chanko master from his hair.
Mm.
And then they can provide an authentic chanko nabe from their really authentic thing, you know. And also...
Maybe that's the first time abroad.
I think so, yeah. I think so. Nabe. So event details are not... pretty sure now, but you know the we try to have a hand printing, you know, or the autograph.
Mm.
So in Japan, in the sumo fighter is a living shrine.
Mm.
You know, that's why the sumo fighter has a big rope in his stomach.
Okay.
As you've seen in a Japanese shrine, right? So the shrine. So that's why the sumo fighter's hand printing and autograph is it's like kind of like armored, you know, avoid, bad,
right.
Karma or something like that. So I think, he's going to do the hand printing and autograph. And also, we provide, very authentic, chanko nabe from, his hair.
Right. So it's like a sacred.
Right.
And you make you strong by having his hand printing.
Yes.
Right. Great. So it's going to be April
1st? Yes.
Okay. And where can we get the information update?
Please check out our the Facebook page.
Azasu, A-Z-A-S-U. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you very much.
That was fun. Okay. So listeners, if you'd like to know more about GAC's restaurants, please visit Yopparai, New York City. It's Yopparainyc. .com and azasunyc.com. That's azasunyc.com. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, please contact us at heritageradionetwork.org. And by the way, we recently launched a beautiful new website, so please visit our page. Today's show was made possible by Corin, and our engineer is David Tatasiore. And Japan Eats live at 3 a.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, and Stitcher Podcast. Thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.